B-Pod Studios.
They're Boston's number one afternoon show.
The most powerful sports radio show in New England.
America's number one afternoon sports show.
Yeah, but we're the biggest.
And number one in your heart.
I just came here to help you rate it.
Sorry, John. Thank you. Don't need it.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And a developing story in the NBA. It's a story just posted on ESPN.com by our Adrian Wojnarowski. ESPN sources tell him that while the league leans toward having 22 teams resume play on July 31st in Orlando, the proposed timeline as the last possible date for an NBA Finals Game 7 is October 12th. That is all expected to pass Thursday at the Board of Governors meeting. That is what our Adrian Wojnarowski tells us, and he joins us now live. So Woj, if everything begins with 22 teams on July 31st, what is the timeline from that point up until Game 7 on October 12th, potentially?
Well, Sage, the format that the league is focused on right now is that 22-team return to play, the 16 playoff teams who are in position now, and then an additional six teams who are on the way out who will play in for the eighth seeds in each conference. And essentially now you see what the structure of the regular season and postseason calendar would look like. And what that would include, Sage, regular season games, play-in games, and then the playoffs and the last possible date that teams have been now informed of for the NBA Finals. Game 7 would be on that October 12th. And teams are now planning to be in Orlando in July, start at their own practice facilities, and then move down for a more formal training camp later in July with that July 31 tip-off in Orlando under this current 22-game proposal.
Wow.
22-team proposal.
22-team, yes.
All right. Hi there, everybody. Welcome to the program, Felger and Maserati, Wednesday, June 3rd. Felger here in our Town Fair Tire Studios. Big Jim Murray will be joining us in our update studio, Maz on location. Hi, Anthony.
Hello, Michael. Good and you?
Just peachy. Thank you so much. Sorry. Hold on. That's peachy. Thank you so much.
Hold it like a pizza.
Yeah. No, I had to bend down and grab my notes and get my readers. Okay, let's start NBA. You heard Adrian Wojnarowski there. I've been running around a little bit, so maybe you've dived into this a little bit more than I have, but I need a translation. I need an explanation of what the NBA is doing and how this is going to work. I'll just read from Shams Charania there of The Athletic. The NBA is planning to propose a 22-team. Woj just said much of this. The 22-team return to the 19-20 season in a Board of Governors meeting tomorrow, sources told The Athletic, with the draft lottery and combine expected to be in August. The NBA's 22-team format at Disney World would bring 16 teams currently in a playoff spot, six additional teams, and include a play-in tournament for the eighth seed. The play-in tournament would work as follows, according to sources. If the ninth seed...
Take a deep breath here, nice and slow. Deep breath, okay? Go slowly.
If the ninth seed is four or fewer games behind, then the eighth and ninth seed will enter a play-in tournament that is double elimination for the eighth seed and single elimination for the ninth. ESPN first reported the league was working on a 22-team model, and again, there's Adrian Wojnarowski right there. I guess my question is, so I sort of get that. The double elimination being that you play two games, eight versus nine, and nine has to win both of them. Okay, what if, say, in the West, where they've included the 13 teams, what if there's multiple teams within four games of the eighth seed? Have they figured that one out?
Not that I'm aware of. No, I told you I was so lost when this thing first came out. I went, what? Because I sort of had the NHL model in my head. The NHL is not playing any regular season games. So I thought, how the hell is the NBA talking about? The NBA is going to play 8 games at the end of the regular season, right? With the 22 teams that are there,
right,
they're actually playing an 8-game regular season.
That's right.
And then depending on where teams end up, they'll have the play-in.
Okay. And okay, and that's it. And basically, you have to be within 4 games of the 8 seed to get a play-in, which, you know, is, in terms of fairness, I think, you know, NHL fans wish the NHL had done this, which is put more weight on your regular season finish. Okay, so the NHL put some weight on it with that little play-in tournament or the round robin for the Bruins, the bye teams. You will determine seeding, and if there's a tie, your regular season standing is the tiebreaker. But that's really not putting much weight there on the regular season, hardly any, in fact. The NBA put a tremendous amount of weight on the regular season, and so like it's fair from that standpoint. So, you know, I think they did the right thing in terms of that, except in the NBA, you know, the NBA just really doesn't matter. That 8 seed is cannon fodder. You know, the eight seed is gone in 4 or 5 games in the first round. Anyway, now that's what it usually is with home road and fans in the stands. And it's obviously going to be different. Neutral sites and TV sets in Orlando. So maybe it's a little different. But, you know, it feels convoluted and complicated just to have a team get blown out in 4 or 5 games by the Lakers or the Bucks. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yeah, look, I found it. Initially, I found it, and I still do, a little confusing and overdone. Now, look, maybe they're looking to get some of those teams to their requisite number of games for those local TV deals. Maybe, you know, maybe they factored that in. So I'm sure they did. I can't imagine that isn't an element in this thing in some way, shape, or form. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know how I feel about this. I want them playing. And so if it's convoluted and those of us from the spectator point of view have to adapt and we have to figure it out and learn something new, then so be it. And be confused, then so be it. I'm glad that they have a plan to come back. But it does have me a little, you know, my head is spinning a little to try to understand the freaking thing.
But I'll tell you what, I'm not going to complain one bit. You can, as we like to tell you, we are the clearinghouse for your bitching. So please, by all means, if you care to bitch today about this, 617-779-0985. Too complicated, too convoluted. What are we doing? Jumping through hoops for 8-9 seeds. I don't get it. Blah, blah, blah. Whatever. Call bitch. Fine. I'm not going to. It actually will give me something to do tonight. I'll actually have something to do tonight other than pick lint out of my navel. And I will dig into the NBA playoff format and figure it out. I didn't have time to get to all of it before I ran in today. And I'm not even going to do it today because I want something to do tonight. I'm saving it. I'm saving a morsel of sports investigation tonight, so when I get home. So I'm not going to complain about it. I am curious about this, though, as it relates to the Celtics. Are the 8 regular season games going to apply to everybody? In other words, right now the Celtics' first round matchup is Philly. Now, I think Philly's garbage. I don't fear Philly, but that's kind of a tough pull to come, you know, right out of the gate. It's because, you know, and again, my computer's not pulled up. You're the 3, they're the 6. You are 3 games behind Toronto for the 2 seed. Philly could move up. They're tied right now with Indiana 5-6.
Correct.
So, you know, if you could get Indy instead of Philly, you could move up and catch Toronto, which is, I think, what you would want, because then it's 2 versus 7. Then you're looking at, like, Brooklyn in the first round. And, you know, we'll leave Kevin Durant to the side here. But as it stands right now, you are Philly in the first round if you advance, and it's Toronto in the second, and then Bucks in the conference final. You can improve that road. Okay, are they going to allow you? Can you reseed? Are they going to allow everyone to reseed?
I think so. I mean, that's the impression I get because, Mike, again, they're categorizing these as regular season games. And so, to me, you just keep adding to the standings, and so that can shift. And the Celtics absolutely can improve their position. I think that this is a significant thing in this scenario for the reasons you just said. Right now, they got, you know, Philly gave them a handful here when they were playing way back when, and it feels like a lifetime ago now. So I don't know whether these games apply or not, but in 2019-20, Philadelphia was giving the Celtics everything they could handle. And so, you know, to me, that's a tough matchup for the Celtics. Philly's a big team. It's one of the things that the Celtics lack is size, maybe the most significant thing they lack. And those, you know, I look at the Celtics and I say, as you mentioned, they're 3 behind Toronto. They're 3 ahead of Miami. In an 8-game regular season, Mike, that's going to be hard to change.
It is.
But But
Philly and Philly Indy are
tied. Move, yeah. But Philly can move.
Philly and Indy are tied.
And if the Celtics can improve it somehow. I'm not with you on the 76ers. I know overall they were trash this year, and if anything, they kind of remind me of last year's Celtics team, a bunch of underachievers when they have, I think, more talent ultimately than the Celtics. But they had proven to be a bad matchup this year for them. Maz was just mentioned, they were 3-1 against them so far. It's a size issue. So unless Joel Embiid comes back and he's way overweight, which could be in play considering the layoff here and that guy's how he handles himself for the most part. I don't like that matchup. So if they can improve it and not face them in the first round, I think they should try to.
So I assume there's movement all over the board. Okay, I assume all these teams can move. That's good news for you.
Absolutely, yeah, it is. Totally. Yeah, and again, Mike, just to finish the point, the real area that could move in the East is that 4-6 spot, because Indiana and Philly are only two. Miami's only two ahead of Indiana and Philly. So those teams could all jumble around a little bit, and that will change the matchups for the Celtics considerably.
So I think the two pieces of good news, it feels like it's going to be Eastern Conference, Western Conference. Okay, good news, because that helps your road. As it, you know, you're going to face Philly in the first round either way, but now, if the regular season, you may not face Philly, but you know, if it just ends that way, it's Philly. But then the second round, you were going to get the Clippers, and then like the Lakers, and then the Bucks. Now it would be Philly Toronto, which without having to go to Toronto, huge break for you because you suck in Toronto. And so I think that this format is good news for the Celtics. It's all sort of on the margins, but if I had to say helps or hurts, I think it categorically helps them.
Yeah, to me, the big thing is the fact that they are going to have these regular season games. Had they locked that in, that would have changed a lot. And because we know that in the scenarios they were discussing in some of them, whether it was the 1-16 or the one that we're discussing now, they're going to get Philly if the regular season is deemed to have been concluded. And so the fact that there can be some shuffling now, it does. There's no question it helps the Celtics a little bit. And, you know, now whether they can capitalize, as we all know, is a completely different discussion, but it does allow them potentially a little bit of an easier road.
Well, okay. And also, the other thing that stands out to me is the July 31 start and the October 12 finish. Okay, generally the NBA playoffs and the NHL for that matter, but the NBA feels worse. I feel like it's going to be a tighter product. We're not going to have these massive, you know, geez, you get in the NBA playoffs and it's game one's
Monday, Friday.
Yeah, game one's Monday, game two is Friday, and you get those in the early rounds when it's like it really doesn't matter, guys. You know, Lakers cannon fodder. You know, Bucks 8 seed, Bucks Orlando. It doesn't matter. And you're sitting there with your schmenzer in your hands for days in between games that really are predetermined anyway. So it's like I feel, you know, usually it takes the NHL and NBA playoffs 2 full months just to do the playoffs. Now the NBA is talking, well, it depends how long that regular season goes. It just feels it's going to be tighter. If you got to get in 8 regular season games and then all 4 rounds and end by October 12th, I feel like we're going to get a little bit of a tighter time frame there with these NBA games.
Absolutely. Look, and I have to believe, too, that they do want to move quickly for lots of reasons, and the virus being chief among them. You don't want to be out there too long, needlessly, when you open yourselves up to a recurrence here, a second wave that could undermine the whole thing.
There's also no excuse. There's no travel.
Yeah, I mean, I would hope that they'd be able to move here. Let's go. You should be playing every other day. Bang, bang, bang.
Okay, still have a lot of questions. So let's get some help with it. Chris Mannix, who joins us frequently on the NBA, will have the very latest and his impressions of it right after these words.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Colin Cowherd of Fox and Fox Sports.
Felger and Maz.
Best afternoon show in America.
Mike Felger.
Felger's a smart aleck.
Tony Maserati.
You know your baseball.
Felger and Maz.
You guys do a great show.
98.5 to Sports Hub.
All right, let's get some help on this. Join us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Chris Mannix, Sports Illustrated. You can catch him on NBC Sports Boston as well. Chris, thanks for taking the time, buddy. How you doing?
I'm good. What's going on, guys?
Just this. Your sport's coming back. So let me ask you the question we were asking before we went to break. I haven't had time to dig into all of the details. But the question is, those 8 regular season games means everybody can move in the standings. Everyone can move in the seedings. And if that's the case, is this proposal good news for the Celtics competitively?
I mean, God, it's so hard to know if it's good news for anybody until we see what these players look like. I mean, that's the more important news. Certainly, if you're, you know, looking at the standings, saying, look, you can jockey to avoid maybe a Philadelphia in the first round, a team that's played Boston pretty tough over the years, will have Ben Simmons coming back. I mean, that's certainly a plus. So, and getting 8 regular season games in before jumping into a playoffs, you know, certainly is great for any team to shake some of the rust off. But I mean, honestly, Mike, it's just about what these guys look like when they come back, and you know what they look like after a 2.5 or 3 week training camp in July. That's going to be the most overwhelming factor to who wins championship this year.
How do you feel about this overall? It sounds to me, Chris, if I may, like you're not exactly thrilled with it.
It's a compromise, that's for sure. You know, there are a number of teams that pushed initially for the 16 team playoff guys to go and then get back, and then there were small market teams that pushed for all 30, and you know, owners that didn't want to have owners of non-playoff teams that didn't want to have their players take 9-10 months off. They didn't want to do it. So this is kind of a way to meet in the middle. The 6 teams that are going to participate that are not part of the playoff field are all within 6 games of the last playoff spot in the standings, 5 in the West and 1 in the East. So you're basically making it as fair as you can possibly be, as it can possibly be, without bringing all 30 teams back, which there were also owners that didn't want to do that either. So this was never going to be a perfect solution. There were always going to be people that disagree with it, and that seems to be the case now.
May I ask you another question?
Did you get a sense, Chris, that there was sort of disagreement between the owners to ultimately settle on this? Because it took a long time to get here, Chris.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we'll see. Like, when the vote happens tomorrow, I don't know if it'll be unanimous. I mean, I think there'll be people that probably vote against it that think there's a better solution that are out there. I mean, the NBA would like to have unanimity in this vote just to send a strong message about how they're going to come back. But there are definitely disagreements on all sides. I mean, I mentioned the small market teams. I mean, they would like to get as many regular season games in as possible because a lot of their revenue is driven from sponsorships and, you know, local television revenue that is at risk with all this. So, I think that there's going to be some disagreement and there's going to be some unhappy people, but that's just the way it goes. I also think, guys, that, you know, this is kind of, you know, it gets you in the red zone here, but I don't think you're all the way there yet. I mean, they still have to settle on safety protocols for all this, how players can move around, and then they're going to sell all that to the union. Now, they've certainly been talking to the union and union officials all throughout this process, but it's one thing to sell Michelle Roberts and Chris Paul. It's another thing to sell all the players as a whole over, you know, how they're going to be able to operate. Because, look, the reality is, I mean, it's going to look like 2 teams will be there from late July till early October. And how they're allowed to operate while they're there will be up for discussion.
Okay, along those lines, are families going to be allowed into the bubble? Are families going to Disney World?
A certain number of people, I've been told the last couple of days, will be allowed with players. I don't know what that number is, but there'll be a certain number of people, yes.
Okay, how do you feel about that?
I just think it increases the risk. I mean, it just the more people you add to the equation, the riskier it gets. Now, one of the reasons that they're going with 22 teams instead of 30 is that, you know, the people involved with 22 teams is lower than the people involved with 30, and thus reducing the risk of, you know, somebody contracting coronavirus through this and, you know, sending the playoffs, you know, shaking it upside down. You bring family members into the mix, and you can tell them, you know, you can't go here, you can't go there, but yeah, kids involved, and who knows where a kid might go, and all it takes is one player on a team to get infected, to infect several others. Now they'll try to mitigate that risk by testing as often as they possibly can. There'll probably be 20,000, 25,000 tests purchased by the NBA to get this thing done, maybe more, if they're talking about going into October. So they'll test multiple times probably during a week, but there's only so much testing you can do without the risk being pretty significant.
Chris, I know Enes Kanter said on his podcast last week that there was a player, former teammate of his, an East All-Star, that said he likely wouldn't play, and if he said the name, it would shock fans. So do you think...
Who is it?
Because of safety issues, regardless, do you think that there's going to be some big names that sit this thing out?
And who is it?
I wish I knew who it was.
Guess. Give me a guess. Who's your leader in the clubhouse?
Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving. Still sitting for the rest of this year. An all-star level guy, I mean, who knows? I do think there'll be a player or two that probably doesn't want to do it. And there are probably a variety of different reasons. I mean, I'll use Giannis as an example. Giannis, just like a month ago, had a new child. If they tell Giannis he can't bring the child down there or can't be involved with certain members of the family, doesn't want to bring the child down to Florida for 3 months, which is distinctly possible as well, how does that affect him? I think there are all kinds of players that have unique situations that they're going to have to decide if this is right for them. One thing I've been told is that, you know, the league won't fight, you know, players that don't want to play. Teams won't fight players that don't want to play. If the player has a legitimate reason not to want to play, I mean, they'll be allowed to kind of do whatever they want to do.
So, Chris, you brought up Brooklyn again, and to me, they're one of the more fascinating things here. And so we're now, you know, we're pretty close to 2 months away from the proposed start. There's still a lot of time. What is the prognosis for Durant and Kyrie?
Well, Durant's not going to play. It just, you know, the Nets, I mean, they're so afraid of Durant and pissing him off that they don't want to say, you know, definitely out. They'll let Durant kind of speak for himself. But he's not going to play. Like, there's just, I mean, the guy is a year removed from, you know, maybe being rushed back from a serious injury into a playoff situation when he ruptured his Achilles. You're not going to take a ruptured Achilles, give it 8 regular season games, and thrust him back into that situation. Irving is a different story. I haven't heard much about the state of his shoulder. It was obviously bothering him all season long. But the amount of time that's passed, the amount of time that will pass before we get into games, it wouldn't surprise me to see Kyrie back in the mix.
Okay, a couple quick ones. How does this change who you favor? And I know you said it's going to all depend what they all come back looking like, and, you know, we just don't know. So try and look ahead to it, Chris. You know, what teams do you think will be focused? Who do you think will come back in shape? Combine that with who benefits from not having to travel in the new format. Try and handicap it for me. Who comes out of this?
Well, the only thing I could say that makes some sense to me, not knowing what these guys look like. But the teams that shoot few threes probably will do better because I think the shooting percentage is going to be college-like. I mean, it's just going to be awful, you know, from the perimeter because guys have been so rusty and so many of them, in addition to being off, you know, haven't done much in the way of workouts. We've talked about Tatum. You know, Giannis has said something similar about not being able to shoot. You know, a lot of these guys, it's, you know, 3 weeks in camp and 8 games is not going to get them into midseason form. So, you know, you look at a team like Milwaukee that doesn't necessarily rely, you know, with their star player anyway, on the three-point shot. Some of these other teams that aren't three-point shooting teams, they stand to benefit more. At least that's my kind of read of the situation. But, you know, in probably 3 weeks' time, guys, when all these players start rolling into camp, they're not going to be able to hide the out-of-shape players. It's going to get out either visibly or it's going to leak out who's in shape and who's not.
Okay, so I'll say this. If there are out-of-shape players on the Lakers, the Clippers, the Bucks, the Celtics, you know, the teams that really have a chance, and I will put the Celtics on that list, that's a disgrace. You know, if you're telling me you're 7-8 seed and you don't expect much, like that, that I half expect. But if one of the players on those teams let themselves go when they've got a championship on the line, shame on them. Couple other quick things.
No, I agree with that, by the way. I totally agree that, you know, you have to figure out exactly the best way humanly possible, whatever money can buy to get you in shape, that's what you got to do.
Chris Mannix of Sports Illustrated, NBC Sports Boston, joining us here. Your thoughts on James Dolan and the Knicks being one of the few teams in all of sports not to make a comment about the current state of affairs in America?
I mean, given how easy it would have been to make a comment, to offer up some kind of boilerplate, you know, statements, it's just dumb, and it's magnified by the fact that it's James Dolan who just is the SS good decision after bad. I mean, he just continually to make bad decisions and PR moves that just make him look stupid. All that being said, I don't know what the value is of what franchises release in statements. I want to see what these franchises do, the actions that they take in the subsequent ones. I mean, I'm reminded throughout all this, guys, is that, you know, we're almost a year removed from the NBA kind of getting lucky in avoiding having players in the NBA start to kneel during the anthem. That was something the NBA and the league office talked about. And I wonder how the league would have reacted. How would teams have reacted if some of their players kneeled during the national anthem? I want to see actions, not, you know, statements, no matter how strongly worded they are. So dumb move by Dolan, but I mean, I you know, when I see like the Memphis Grizzlies release a statement, it doesn't really resonate with me.
Can I ask one quick one before we let you go?
Yeah.
Who comes back fatter, Zion or Embiid?
Oh God, I'm gonna go Embiid. Embiid just, I think, is more. He is more prone to let himself go. I think Zion, given his age and how badly he wanted to get back and play, I think he's probably kept himself in better shape. We've seen Joel Embiid. I mean, we've seen him in bad shape in the past couple of years.
Okay, I actually do have one follow-up one. It's on boxing. Chris, you're a big boxing guy. Who's Mike Tyson fighting? Because he's fighting someone. You know he's coming back. You know he's going to fight in the ring. It's going to be a, I say, legit heavyweight fight. Who's he fighting?
Well, he's not going to fight a legit heavyweight fight. Like, he's just not going to get in with, you know, any of these, you know, average pros or much less a real champion. That's not going to happen. What I can see Tyson doing is, you know, Tito Ortiz is out there. He's a former MMA fighter. He's got a little bit of a boxing background, big name. I could see that happening. They've talked at least about putting something together. Holyfield has said some stuff, but like a day after they make a deal for Tyson Holyfield 3, we're all going to kind of look at video of Holyfield training and look at video of Tyson, and it would just be ugly in the ring. I'd almost like to see Tyson do like one of those rough and rowdy exhibitions where you're, you know, standing in there against average Joes for a minute, just knocking them out.
Well, Chris,
if you want to have some fun in the ring, do that.
Would you hear Dana White? He said Mike's got something lined up and it's pretty big. So you don't believe him?
I mean, Dana says a lot. Like it's he has. I know from talking to people close to Tyson, he's got feelers out there to a number of different people, and it's not the offers coming into Tyson are not the ones interested in not the CES promotions in New England, not the $20 million from Bare Knuckle Boxing. Who the hell knows how they would get that money? Like, not those offers haven't really resonated. He's got some feelers out there to the Tito Ortiz, to the Holyfields, and some other guys about some kind of exhibition event that won't put him in any kind of significant risk.
So who's a more legit return prospect? George Foreman 10 years ago, 20 years ago, or Mike Tyson right now?
Oh, George Foreman by a mile. Like, George Foreman came back in his late 30s. He was off for 10 years, but he was still, I think he was 37 maybe when he came back for the first time. I mean, the fact that he was able to fight for and win a championship in his 40s was remarkable, but he wasn't off for 15 years and 53 years old when Tyson came, is presumably going to come back. You have to remember, too, like, Foreman succeeded because Foreman's body type, he was just immovable. I talked to Holyfield 2 weeks ago, and he was talking about his fight with Foreman. Holyfield said that Foreman was the one guy he just couldn't move. He had him in the ring, and he couldn't move the guy no matter how hard he hit him. Tyson was never that guy. He's a smaller heavyweight, scared people to death, and could knock you out with speed and power.
Okay.
So, yeah, Holyfield by a lot.
I don't appreciate the cold water on the Mike Tyson thing.
Me neither.
I think it's a fun story, Chris. I think we should have fun with it. Okay,
yeah, so go to hell, Chris.
Yeah, let's not poo-poo it. Okay.
Facts aren't allowed on
this
show, Chris.
F the facts on that one. Yeah, it's a good story. Chris,
if you're not going to pour gasoline on it, go away.
Chris, thanks for the time. We appreciate it.
You got it, guys.
Okay, I see you lined up. Your phones, I promise, right after Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
By and large, we don't remember the last segment.
Felger and Mash.
I mean, I don't remember what I said last segment.
I don't remember what I said 60 seconds ago.
Felger and Mash.
We don't remember who we are or what we said last week.
Yeah, but Felger, I'm the highlight of your show.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Okay, we start with some thoughts on the return of the NBA. I know you have some thoughts as well, so right to you, as promised. Eric in Charlestown. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, I just didn't want to get lost in the shuffle. As much as this might affect Eastern Conference seeding, this also opens the door for the Grizzlies to fall out of the lottery, which it's a hot garbage draft this year, but that's another plus for the Celtics. I'll hang up. Thanks.
Okay, so Celtics fans are still obsessed with these draft picks. Still upset. I don't mean to yell at you again.
Well, even Gasper brought the same thing up on Saturday, too.
I'm going to yell at you, but I really don't. I don't mean to, but I just. How many crappy draft picks are you still like? Why are we still dinking around and pulling it out for the draft picks?
It's like all these people that are so passionate with the team and the league. It's like you somehow don't understand how the draft really even works. If you don't have anything in the top five, who cares?
We gonna stuff another guy in Maine?
Right.
Like, we've been over this. Like, how many freaking guys do you want at your end? How many draft picks are you going to make? It's unless you're telling me you're going to trade it, but what are you going to trade it for?
Right.
So, oh, wow. So Memphis falls out of the playoffs. They're in the lottery, which means they have a point. I'm sure it's protected. I can't even remember. I stopped paying attention. What are the protections on it, Jimmy? You can't even get high with that thing, can you?
The Memphis pick?
Yeah.
It's top eight protected.
So even if they win the lottery, you don't get it. You get either the eighth pick or whatever that is, the 14th pick. We, what are you going to do with that guy?
No matter what you sprinkle on it, that ain't getting you high.
I don't mean to yell at the caller, but what? How are you Celtics fans? Still, you're so cute, you guys.
Add that to the list of the ice and the micing up the players.
Oh, but they're still, tanking for Trevor Lawrence. What?
Right.
But you're still going on with the draft picks?
Right now, that Memphis pick would be 17th in the draft.
Undersized wing who can't shoot.
What would you rather have, Luka Doncic or Jaylen Brown in the 17th pick?
See, I have no idea, Jimmy, what he's talking about there. Do you, Jim?
Not a clue. We talked during the time of the draft about how the Memphis pick and Jaylen Brown would have gotten you up to get Luka Doncic.
So, like,
well, I would take Doncic.
Thank you.
If anyone was following that, you get a gold medal.
A lot of people do follow me. Thank you.
Once again, Jimmy stops me in my tracks. Lee in Maine. Hi, Lee.
God forbid.
Lee, you're up next. Call us back. You know the number. David in New Bedford on the return of the NBA. Go ahead, David. Hello, David.
Dave.
Okay. Call us back.
Here we go.
I have heard the draft thing. I don't care about the draft thing. I care about this opening up a chance for you to win a championship this year. Like, I mean, next to that, I mean, don't you agree the whole thing, the whole pandemic has opened up a chance for them to win a championship?
They're a legitimate. Considering that everyone would return and that say they're all happy and happy to be back and everything, you have Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and all the rest. Yeah, they have as good a chance as anybody.
Well,
else.
I'm saying like if it wasn't for the apocalypse, you would have been Philly in the first round, on the road at Toronto the second round, at Milwaukee for the conference final, and then at the LA Lakers or the LA Clippers for the NBA championship.
Yeah.
No shot.
At best.
No, zero chance. Zero chance.
It would have been a maybe competitive Eastern Conference final. That's, I think, the high watermark for them.
No, they weren't getting out of the East, please. We had this discussion way back when. They weren't going to get out of the East. But I'll tell you, the other thing it introduces, and I know that we're getting into asterisks here, but, you hear Chris Mannix say, well, Giannis has a young child. Who knows how that affects. Like, to me, now you start introducing the elements of star players being, either half invested or not invested at all and not showing up. Who the hell knows? I think all bets are off. You could absolutely steal a championship.
Okay.
No two ways about it.
The door is ajar but I think it's ajar because of taking out the travel and the road environments. If you're telling me, Maz, that Giannis, who now, has established himself as an MVP and a rising star in the league, or if not the star in the league, that guy needs a title. If you're telling me he's going to take his eye off the prize because of, I don't know, he let himself get out of shape or even having a kid, which I know is important, but so is work. And, I hope everyone's okay, providing they are. He can leave the house and go win a championship. If you're telling me that he's going to come in something less because of this, shame on him. And I'd say the same thing for any player who came in out of shape, anyone, but especially someone who has a chance for a championship. So, like, I don't think, to me, Maz, the door is not ajar because of that. The door is ajar because you don't have to go to Toronto for Game 7, Milwaukee for Game 7, and Los Angeles for Game 7. That's a big difference. I like to think that Giannis, LeBron, Kawhi, all these guys are going to be hyper-focused because they got a chance at another championship.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing the players on the top teams aren't going to show either. At the end of the day, I do think they're going to show up. But, Mike, who the hell knows? I just wonder. I have doubts about a lot of these players. being as committed because, you know, now again, I don't think it's going to be the guys on the top teams. I think it's going to be the Damian Lillards of the world who said, if I don't have anything to play for, I'm not coming back, which I understand. So I think it's going to be those guys. And the home road thing, too, of course. Absolutely, there's a mechanism in there that would allow the Celtics to be more competitive for a title than they would have otherwise been.
David New Bedford, just jump back on. Go ahead, David.
Hi. Yeah, I was wondering what your thoughts are. Do you see any of the teams from 9 to 13 in the Western Conference actually getting the eighth seed?
If there's a play-in, sure. If there's a play-in, I mean, yeah. I don't have in front of me. The 9 seed I thought was 3 games behind whoever the 8 seed was. In the East, it's like 4 games, that last spot. 3 games in 8, you know, 8 regular season games to make it within. Well, I mean, I take this back. If you're within 4 games, you have a play-in.
Correct.
So, yes, yes, caller. If someone can force the play-in, anything goes.
Yeah, I give, in particular, I would give New Orleans and Portland a good chance, and not just because they're the closest. But, you know, they've got some star power there. Portland, we all know that Lillard can absolutely go off and take over games. We've seen it. And then certainly, with the way New Orleans was playing there at the end, with the Zion factor, they were a bit of a different team after he joined them. So you got to weight that. You know, I think you have to weigh it accordingly and look at it and say, those teams were playing, can play. Portland's going to be healthier than they were, and in the case of New Orleans, you're going to have Zion. I think you got to take that into account.
Okay, I want to follow up on something we talked to Chris Mannix about, and that's Charles Dolan and the Knicks. That absolute disgrace of an organization. We'll get to that right after these words.
Boston's home for sports. Fill your glass. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Doing what they do best.
Now talk about soap opera.
Wilder Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Chris Mannix as Sports Illustrated, NBC Sports Boston, joining us here. Your thoughts on James Dolan and the Knicks being one of the few teams in all of sports not to make a comment about the current state of affairs in America.
I mean, given how easy it would have been to make a comment, to offer up some kind of boilerplate, you know, statements, it's just dumb, and it's magnified by the fact that it's James Dolan, who just is the SS good decision after bad. I mean, he just continues to make bad decisions and PR moves that just make him look stupid. All that being said, I don't know what the value is of what franchises release in statements. I want to see what these franchises do, the actions that they take in the subsequent ones. I mean, I'm reminded throughout all this, guys, is that, you know, we're almost a year removed from the NBA kind of getting lucky in avoiding having players in the NBA start to kneel during the anthem. That was something the NBA and the league office talked about, and I wonder how the league would have reacted. How would teams have reacted if some of their players kneeled during the national anthem? I want to see actions, not, you know, statements, no matter how strongly worded they are. So, dumb move by Dolan, but, I mean, I you know, when I see, like, the Memphis Grizzlies release a statement, it doesn't really resonate with me.
That was Mannix on Dolan. This is an amazing story. So the Knicks, again, one of the few teams in all of sports not to publicly address the Floyd situation in Minnesota or the protests or any of this. And the only thing that came out was an internal email that Dolan sent to members of his organization a couple days ago. And then yesterday he had to double back and clarify on another internal email and follow up on it. But his initial internal email, Maz, to people who work for him with the Knicks said this, quote, "We at Madison Square Garden stand by our values of a respectful and peaceful workplace. We always will. As companies in the business of sports and entertainment, we are not any more qualified than anyone else to offer our opinion on social matters," end quote. How do you feel about that statement internally in his organization as they did not offer anything publicly?
Yeah, look, I think it's pretty apparent. The way I read it is we're not letting politics into the workplace, so don't even think about it. That's how I read it. Now, again, you can spin it any way you want, but I think it's asinine. And look, with all the respect to Chris Mannix, whom I love, when he says, I don't know what the value is in releasing his statement, I would say, okay, what's the value in not releasing a statement? And especially when the rest of the league does, and we're talking, as we know, about a largely African-American league. I think the Knicks look like a bunch of jackasses, and Dolan looks like an absolute fool. So now he's trying to put the toothpaste back into the tube, but the fact is he's completely out of touch and completely oblivious.
Oh, it's just, it's atrocious. It's atrocious on just a purely practical business level, okay? Never mind morally and what's right. You know, just to simply make a statement as a big civic, you know, institution, it's important for you to speak and say something. And so, but that's just, you know, that's morally, that's the big picture. In the small picture, it's just smart business to do right by your employees. And you know, James Dolan should understand how his employees feel about the situation, his players. Okay, and never mind, you know, other African Americans in his organization, but just the most important pieces for him are the players and how important this is to them. To not support them, it just shows you what a putz this guy is.
Completely.
Complete and utter putz. When the entire league, you know, and I think Adam Silver on down, and the Celtics are included in this, want to do the right thing and be on the right side of it and do what's right for society. But I also think they're smart and practical in knowing that their league is largely black. This is a huge story for them. So we're going to stand with them because they're our partners. And so just business-wise, it's smart to stand on the side of your employees who you need. So the whole league does it. The whole league does it from Adam Silver on down. Adam Silver wrote a letter to league employees. His email came a day before Dolan, where he actually said he encouraged them to go protest, basically. Silver said, I'm heartened by the many members of the NBA and WNBA family, players, coaches, legends, team owners, executives at all levels, speaking out to demand justice, urging peaceful protest, and working for meaningful change. So it, actually, from the NBA, from the head of the NBA on down, they're actually encouraging people. That was a tacit encouragement from Adam Silver to say something, do something. And still, James Dolan says, nah, we're not going to do it. I'm reading from the New York Times. The New York Times then went on and went through all the teams and players that have made statements, you know, or acted out in some way in the last couple of days, even including Michael Jordan, who heretofore has said absolutely nothing about these issues. Zero. Even Jordan got off his ass. They mentioned that Greg Popovich of the Spurs actually called a reporter for The Nation to offer a quote. This is a whopper. Here's Greg Popovich's quote. Quote, if Trump had a brain, even if it was 99% cynical, he would come out and say something to unify people, Popovich told The Nation. But he doesn't care about bringing people together. Even now, that's how deranged he is. It's all about him. It's all about what benefits him personally. It's never about the greater good, and that's all he's ever been, end quote. So Popovich does that. A Dolan statement, again reading from the Times, also stands in contrast to his own willingness to be publicly political. During the 2016 presidential election cycle, Dolan spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to help elect Trump as president. So he's a Trump guy. So is that what it is? He feels if he comes out and speaks out against police brutality that he's somehow crossing Trump? I mean, that's obviously what it is, right?
Yeah, well, so you beat me to it. That's what I was just going to say. I think he's, you know, he's in Trump's corner, so the last thing he wants is his organization or anyone from his organization to come out and denounce Trump. So he told everybody to put a sock in it.
So yeah, it's not that, he's just a tone-deaf moron. He always has been. He always will be. He got in a public beef with one of the more beloved Knicks of the last 25 years, and Charles Oakley, and he hasn't, you know, I think they're suing each other. He has these public beefs with fans. He's just a dick, plain and simple. He's protecting the money. He couldn't care less about how his employees feel about what's going on when you have a prominent African-American workforce. Like, it's sad, but I wasn't even shocked. I'm like, of course James Dolan had this kind of stance on it.
Of course. Now, I don't think he's a racist. He hires, and his hiring track record with the Knicks in terms of minorities and women is as good as any team in the league, frankly. He's hired a ton of African-Americans and women, and like, so I don't know if it's that. I just think he's another one of these political a-holes who just, we've lost the center because of guys like this. When it's something is so obvious and so atrocious as what happened in Minneapolis, but you can't bring yourself to say it because you are, quote unquote, on the other side of the political spectrum. You can't even give that inch. That's the problem. And back to Greg Popovich, I think that's Trump's problem, too. You know, leadership is about trying to bring people together, at least trying to unify people, trying to reach out. You know, leadership is not attacking people on the other side. It's reaching out to them and seeing if you can bring any of them to the center and bring any of them to a consensus. But Trump has is just not capable of it, and he has helped foster, which we were on the way to anyway, but he helped foster this entire environment, which has led to where we are today. So I think Popovich is absolutely right about that. But anyway, Dolan has been political in the past. He spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to support Trump. He also previously weighed in on the shooting of another black man. He once sang a song about Trayvon Martin with his band. So James Dolan
that's
has
right,
one of these
stupid
bands.
Band.
Okay, his band is JD and the Straight Shot.
That's right.
Okay, so he has a song with some of the lyrics on the Trayvon Martin thing go like this, quote, "Who is that walking? A shadow in the street? Looks like trouble from a judgment seat. There's no good under that hood." So that's his lyric. So maybe there is. Maybe I spoke too soon on the racial thing. But anyway, so that's what the Times points out there. And then they go into some background on James Dolan. The Knicks were on pace to miss the playoffs for the seventh straight season until the campaign was postponed because of the coronavirus in March. Shortly after the suspension, Dolan announced he had tested positive for the virus. He has since recovered. So anyway, after the entire league takes a stand, and Adam Silver sends out an email to his employees encouraging people basically to take a stand and complimenting them for their actions and taking stands, James Dolan says, "Nope, we value a respectful workplace. We are no more qualified than anyone else to offer our opinion on social matters." And then again, he backtracked yesterday and sent out another email. You can read that as well. But typical. This guy, typical. What a yutz, James Dolan. All right, so that leads to another thing that we want to talk about today, and that is this whole thing. Is it going to impact, and are we back to one of the stories that is, I don't know, that I've previously found maybe the most boring topic in sports radio, in sports in general, but I don't know, maybe there's a new spin on it now, so we do want to hit on it, and that is the anthem issue and kneeling during the anthem. Is this going to change that story or the nature of that when we come back to sports? Let's hit on that after Murray's 90-second update with your calls right after this, no commercials.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.